Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, it's time to make time for Toski as we welcome the legendary Hall of Famer, Bob Toski. So stay tuned and get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones.
All right.
Welcome to the show. So glad you'd be along. This hour, it's time to make time for Toski. I'm talking about the living legend, the guy who is the last link between the old era and the new era, one Bob Toski, a regular contributor. Mr. T, welcome back to the show. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Keith. It's always a pleasure to be with you and to talk about golf and life and people.
Yeah, well, you know, 98 years young, he's got some life to talk about. And if you listen to this show regularly, you know Bob is a regular contributor, which we're pleased about because there's stories coming out of his mouth that you won't hear anywhere else. And that's part of what we want to do this hour. It's just Bob's full of wealth and wisdom. And, well, he's full of a bunch of stuff that people have said over the years, but we'll leave that aside there. But hardly anybody's left to still call you out on that, Bob, so there you go. But it's always great to have you on, my friend.
You can imagine how much experience I've had in golf and life. So started playing when I was 6, and here I am at 98 talking to you, Keith.
Well, not only that, but you still sneak out and you knock the ball around a little bit. So, first of all, I hope to come anywhere close to 98 years old. But the other token is it's a life sport, and you are living proof that golf is a life sport, lifelong sport.
Yeah, well, I wrote a book, Golf is a Game of a Lifestyle, with Jerry Tardy. And I really enjoyed that because it kind of resembled the fact that here I am in 98 and I started playing when I was 6. And I still, I can drive the ball about 190 yards at 98. So
that's pretty good, especially for being like not even 198 pounds. You know, you're like 108 now.
Well, I'm 138 pounds right now.
Oh,
that's
you fatty. Oh, you big fatty, you.
Yeah,
oh,
I'm a heavyweight now.
Indeed. But you were only 118 pounds when you played. So,
yes,
you know, you
finally exactly
put on
right.
You finally put on the freshman 20. Very, very happy for you. Took you a long time. You never went to college. Took you a long time to do that.
It's amazing what I did with that body, being that light and having that kind of a frame. But I had excellent fundamentals, great feel for the golf swing, great feel for playing the game, very competitive, liked to win, hated to lose, and that's the story of Bob Toski.
Pretty much in a nutshell there. But, you know, if you still hit it 190 yards, people always complain they don't hit it very far. But it's not about always how far you hit the ball. It's where you hit the ball and how you play the course, said hole or what have you. And that's what gets missed a lot of times, especially with the recreational golfers.
Well, you got to have airmail and a zip code. But most golfers have a lot of airmail and no zip code. And the faster you swing the golf club and the further you hit the golf ball, the more it'll go offline. So it's a game of finding the rhythm of your swing and the speed of your swing that you can control and hit the ball consistently in the fairway. Otherwise, you're playing Gibby golf or something like that, but, they're on a safari out there every weekend.
No question. You mentioned Jerry Tardy's name, and Jerry was at the PGA Merchandise Show, but I missed him. He was given an award. and doing some other things. But I did reach out to him per your suggestion, and Jerry said, you know, I appreciate, tell Daskey I said hello. I appreciate the offer, but I don't do appearances or radio shows. And I said, okay, Jerry, but you know, you're kind of like, he's got an award or two named after him now. You know, when you get to be of a certain age, you get awards named after you. Then you should talk to as many people as you can while you can.
Well, why do they give you awards when you're later? They feel like you've earned it, I guess.
Yeah, well, his award in his name went to Steve Mona, who was a guest on the show a long time ago, back when he was in charge of the National Golf Foundation, and Steve has overseen three big golf entities, and I guess for longevity in the industry, he was awarded the Jerry Tardy Award. But, you know, kudos to Steve, and we need to circle back with him to see how things are going with him. Pretty good, I guess. He's got an award for his mantle, so can't be all bad.
Well, he's a hell of a guy, and every time we played, I was always getting beat and handing the money, and he loved it.
You talking about Jerry Tardy taking your money?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. No wonder he doesn't want to be in the same room with Toskey. I got it now. That makes total sense.
He was a hustler, I'll tell you.
Well, yeah, pretty much, because he's still on the Golf Digest, the executive portion of the magazine, which is saying something, because some great writers have been let go over the years, and editors and everything else, and this whole golf world media thing that we know is totally on its head right now.
Well, I know when he was first starting with Golf Digest, it's nothing but like a page boy. And here he is today, the number one general manager for the CEO for the magazine. So I'm proud of him. He's done a hell of a job.
Yeah, well, so have you, because you've passed a lot of wisdom along to a lot of people. And obviously we know Steve Bourbon and Brian Varsity are two of your proteges. But you share your wisdom no matter what. Unfortunately, Bob doesn't do the PGA merchandise show anymore, but otherwise we'd be having the roundtable discussion like in the past. But you never hesitate to share any of that.
Well, when you care, you share. And I always felt like the least I can do is share my knowledge of a player and a teacher and a person in life, as a father or a friend or whatever. But I always feel like if people want to spend enough time with me to understand life and golf, the least I can do is try to help them understand why I am what I am, why I did what I did, and help them to try to get an insight to golf and what it means to play the game and enjoy life with your companionship with people. And it wasn't hard for me to do that. I love to teach. I love to play. I loved my wife. I still love my family. And I'm loving to live. At 98, I'm sitting here talking to you, and sometimes I just don't believe that I've been on Mother Earth this long. But I'm going to enjoy it as long as I can with people, and I hope to have my 99th in September, and I know you're going to be there. All I've got to do is find a song that I'll be able to sing on key.
I don't know. You've been doing pretty good with the key thing. I tell people, those of us who can't sing, play. So I'm sticking with that one. I have a range of about, like, right here. Like, people say, oh, your speaking voice is so nice. I said, yes, but I do not sing. So, you know, and my mother had a beautiful voice. So I'm really irritated with her. that she never passed that on to me. So that's kind of way life goes. And sometimes things get passed on to people, and sometimes they don't. But in your case, your older brother saw something in you, and not that he passed it down to you, but your brother Jack was a big influence, and he was kind of almost a taskmaster for you to get out and do your best on the golf course.
Well, Jack knew of all, and he was the only one in the family that had an insight that this young kid wanted to compete and play golf in the big time. And when I finally made the tour and became the number one player in 54, my brother was crying so hard down behind a tree on the golf course that he had left the TV room, and he cried his heart out because his young brother made it on the tour, and he had been a tough taskmaster for me. It was tough love, but I knew why he was that way, because he wanted me to have the ability to create a concentrated mind on the game and become a tough competitor, and he did. And, you know, I'm the only one left in the family of nine. They've all passed away, so I'm happy to be able to carry the torch as long as I can.
Well, you're really the only Toski of that family, too. The other Algotoskis, you know, didn't change their name.
Algotoski, the guy in the first tee at the Riviera at L.A. Open, says, on the tee we have Bob play away, young man. So I hit my drive, and he called me over and said, you're a rookie, aren't you? I said, yes. He says, are you going to play on the tour? I said, yes, I am, sir. He says, well, you better change that name. He couldn't pronounce it.
No, you changed your name, you changed the game, for sure. And speaking of Riviera, they will not hold the Genesis Invitational, and our thoughts are still with all of our friends and people we don't know in Los Angeles and through that area. It is just devastation to the unbelievable degree to see that. Of course, in D.C., there was a plane that crashed earlier in the week, the last week, so that was not good either. Hit running collision with an Army helicopter. So, yeah, lots of things like that happening.
Well, tell me, is if they control the fires yet in L.A.?
Well, some have been under control, and there are other ones that break out. So I defer everyone to the Weather Channel and to the local L.A. news to follow that. But yeah, it's been devastating, but it's really affected the golfers in that area. You know, when Riviera has to close down, and the air quality's been horrible and all those things. So it's just not good at all. But we have a number of people that we've known who've been displaced. So we always think about them and try to do whatever we can. But yeah, Bob,
it's a shame what's happened there.
Yeah, no question about it.
To change the subject, did you go to the PGA show?
Yeah, I went to the PGA show. I missed you there, and we'll talk about that when we come back from this break. We're with Bob Toski. We're spending the hour with the multi-Hall of Famer and legend. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Annika Sorensen, and you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones.
And we're back on Teed Up with Keith Jones, spending it with a regular contributor, Bob Toski, with us this hour. And Bob, did miss you in Orlando. It was an interesting show, a lot of activity. Supposedly the biggest one in 15 years, according to Reed Exhibitions, who puts on the show and tallies all the numbers and such. So if that indeed is the fact, it was really a very, very good show for a lot of people. But I didn't hear any negativity. Let's do all the influencers were bugging people. But other than that, you know, this is I'm one of the original influencers. So, you know, when you talk about radio, national radio, it makes it's a different thing. But you were missed. People were asking about you at different times as I passed through. And it was, you know.
Well, it's nice to be remembered.
Well, you certainly influenced a lot of people and a lot of golf professionals. Actually, I always call you the godfather of the golf swing because you kind of helped create that whole segment of the industry. People said, what, I can get paid to teach golf? And off everybody went. So I did see Breed. I didn't get a chance to talk to him, Michael Breed, and didn't get a chance to see Jim McClain and some other people. But I did get a chance to talk to David Ledbetter. So David will be coming back on the show this year, so that is great. He's a busy man anyway, but we did.
There's so much more technology now to teach. They got all kinds of gimmicks to teach the golf swing. And my opinion, being as old as I am, and had the experience I've had as a golfer and as a teacher, I've always said that you got to have a trained eye, an experienced mind, and be able to convey a message to people about the golf swing. And I don't need all those gimmicks that they have. No, for teaching, it's amazing what I thought you probably had seen some of that stuff as a PGA show.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Simulators are really big these days as well, you know, and actually the professionals are using that. We'll talk about that a little bit on the show. I don't want to get too sidetracked with Bob on that, but because right this segment I want to talk a little bit more about the teaching part of it and the aspect and the technology Bob's talking about. But yeah, you have TrackMan, and you have and McLean's a big TrackMan guy, and Dylan Ross, who's got that great facility in Palm Beach, they use a lot. He's a TrackMan ambassador there, so that's holds its value. And then you have different types of technology that you can use. They've actually there has been developed the technology where what used to be a flat putting green now can have undulations added. It's a moving floor kind of in a golf kind of way, which is pretty interesting, pretty unique.
Yeah, well, once you get more undulations in the putting green like they have at the Masters, I always said that I'll put you on 18 greens at the Masters. Let me put the ball on the green and you won't break 80.
Well, I know we're definitely going to be doing a show with you towards the Masters. I did actually run into John Steinbreeder at the PGA Merchandise Show, and he's done Masters.com for a long time and one of the most knowledgeable people about Augusta. So we have some great Augusta shows planned, including I'm looking forward to being on the grounds, the hallowed grounds of Augusta National during tournament week. But it's all that technology now that gets utilized, and it's tough because instructors can get charged a lot of money, because consumers can get charged a lot of money. Sometimes the consumers can buy similar units to do that at their house, at their residence, but it gets pretty costly.
You mean they're going to self-teach themselves after they've had instruction from a teacher?
Well, they can, and some don't get instruction from the teacher. They think they can teach themselves. I know what you're going to say, and I'm going to save it for the next segment, because I'm going to give you a platform there, give you the soapbox for a longer time. But I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, because I know what the great Bob Tassi is going to say about trying to teach golf to yourself. It's no bueno. It's no good. Don't do it. Don't try this at home, as the great once great saying is has been said. But we're with Bob Towsky, the Hall of Famer. He's going to spend the hour with us. So if you're listening at home, appreciate it. If you're listening in your vehicle, I appreciate it as well. We always appreciate you listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. And we got Bob for the hour. So we come back from this break. More Bob Towsky.
Hi, this is John O'Hurley reminding you you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. I haven't been this excited since I discovered I couldn't lick my elbow.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000 foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
And we are back to start the second half of the show, spending it with Hall of Famer, multi Hall of Famer, and golf legend Bob Towsky, regular contributor to the show. I don't, if nobody else wants him, I'll take him all day long. Bob looks forward to it. And at 98 years young, he can pretty much do what he wants to do. And if he wants to come on this show, I'm certainly fine with it. And the guys are nodding their heads affirmatively over there as well. So before we went to the break, we almost went down the rabbit hole of self-teaching, of teaching yourself the game of golf. But we know with the 27,000 plus PGA professionals, you should seek the advice of one of them. And since Bob is a PGA of America guy himself, he would be the first guy to step up and say, come see me or come see someone in the PGA of America with the teaching certification that can help you with that.
Well, you know, teaching is you're teaching people and people that are unathletic. And my experience as a teacher with Golf Digest, which I taught for 20 years in my golf schools, I found out that a greater majority of the golfers have poor hand-eye coordination. So the first thing you have to teach is to train their hands to have some feel for the swing and how it contacts the ball. So if you can't find a ball with a golf club, of which many do, and when they do find a ball, it's going in every direction but the fairway. So how do you teach them to become more control for the club face? What you do is take them to the putting green and have them putt a straight ball in the hole, because they have to aim and swing the putter head where they're aiming. And when you find that they can't aim and they have a poor grip and the hands are too tight because they're over-controlling the club, you've got to lighten their grip pressure and let the arms and hands swing the club freely, which is the feeling that the swing is helping you instead of you helping the swing. And there is the essence of teaching feel for how to apply the swinging motion of the club to find the ball. And you do that by putting the ball on the ground and seeing the ball go in the hole from a short distance and a longer distance. And the further you're away from the hole, the more difficult it is to find the ball running in that 4.5-inch hole. So the learning process has to be, if you have poor hand-eye coordination. And I might say right now, in my 20 years, over 90% of my students were unathletic, and you had to teach them to be able to feel their golf swing with their hands, be able to find how their feet can help control their body. And those two parts, Keith Jones, are really the most important way to find how to play golf, because something that's touching has more control over something that isn't touching. So your feet are touching the ground, your hands are touching the club, and the sensation of foot action, hand action, is so important to be able to make a full swing, accelerate the club, and find the ball with a club face square. The object is to be able to find the ball with a club face square, and if you've got poor hand-eye coordination, you got to find success by putting the ball, chipping the ball, pitching the ball, and then finally when you go further away from the hole and then to the driving tee, you have some idea of controlling the swing and being able to visualize where the ball you want to drive, whether it's a little draw or a little fade or a straight ball. And those are the three dimensions that you play from. And if you can consistently put the ball in the fairway with a draw or a fade or a straight ball, then that's what golf is all about. But the problem is, my experience in watching the weekend golfer is they have curvature of the golf ball, but it's never in the fairway. It's offline because they have not controlled and trained their hands and their feet to support their golf swing. So foot action and hand action are synonymous in learning how to play, because your feet help you support your golf swing from a turning force to a shifting force while you have a swinging force. So you have three dimensions taking place in less than 2 seconds. And you, if you think about this, break this down into a simple formula. Keith Jones, have you ever played golf?
Yes.
Okay, what was the length of your driver?
Initially or now? I'll just say 250.
No, the length of
the length of my drive. I think it's 36. I think it might be a 36.
No, your driver's got to be at least 43 or 4 inches long.
Oh, 42. I'm sorry, I was thinking something else. Yeah, okay, so 42.
Well, how long did you, when you bought a shirt, how long was your sleeve length?
It was a short sleeve. It was.
You bought a shirt and all the way down to your wrist joints.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I bought a long sleeve shirt. Yes, all the way down to my wrist joints.
What was the length of your arm?
35.
All right. 42 and 35 is?
77.
Now you have a 77 lever system. 77 inches where the club has to start on the surface of the turf and then swing up in the air around your body and then back from the backswing to the downswing to the contact point. And that, my dear man, is a talent that very few people have ever learned properly. Because speed kills. And if you increase the speed of the club head and don't know where it's going, you're just playing for a good shot. And you've got to have a decisive, controlled swing through your hands. It's important to train your hands in the feel of what you're doing through your hands, because they travel 360 degrees in your golf swing, 180 each way. They travel further and faster than any one part of your body, faster than your hip turn, faster than your cranium, which turns, but not like your hands and wrists. They are the fastest producers of speed in the golf swing. And the chain is only as strong as its weakest link. And the wrist joints have to be trained to accelerate and allow the club to rotate and accelerate and find the golf ball. So now you've got rotational force, and you're dealing with lateral force and vertical force. Those three forces are in the golf swing, and they only last about 2 seconds. And in 2 seconds, you've got to be able to see where you want to strike the golf ball, whether you're going to hit a draw, fade, or a straight ball. And you then have to apply what your eyes conceived, what your brain received from your eyes, and what your body did to swing and find the ball correctly. And that's what golf is all about.
So you said it a couple times there, train. So somebody who's not athletic, you said you talked about training them. Now you've talked about training your hands. So how does one do that?
Well, you start with the proper grip, with the proper grip pressure. Most people over-control the club because of fear of losing control, so they hold the club a little bit too tight, and the wrist joints and the hands cannot perform the act very well. I remember giving a lesson to a gentleman one time down at Ocean Reef, and as I looked at his hands when he was holding the club, I thought he was holding the club so tight, it looked like his arms got so tight and his hands were holding the club so tight because he was in fear of losing control. And I said, why don't you hold the club like a surgeon instead of a butcher? And the gentleman looked at me, and he said, Mr. Toski, I'm a surgeon. And I said, well, you wouldn't operate on me. I said, the way you were holding the club with all that pressure, when you operate, don't you hold a scalpel and try to cut the and put an incision in the body with light touch and apply not too much force pressure, and then you know how to become a good surgeon because you're not. But you're not controlling the hands like a butcher. A butcher has a whole different act of how to swing. So I did one thing that I had never done, but I did at that time. I said, I'm going to swing this golf club, and after contact, I will open my hands up. I will just leave go of the golf club after the point of impact, and the ball will go straight, and the club head will travel left because it has to go in a circle. As they swing the club in their body to the right, and then down. Toward the line of play, and it goes left. And I said, I want you to swing this golf club and right after impact, let the club leave your hands. We'll see how sensitive your hands are. He took 3-4 golf swings. Never finished his swing every time and never let the club get go after impact. And I had hit some golf balls or swung and hit the balls with the golf club. And I hit one, I could hit one, a fade or draw and let the club head leave after just contact. So that's training your hands to become the controllers and the holders of the golf swing. And if you don't think that's important, every day in your life, you take control of what you eat. So look at what you do with your hands every day. You take that for granted, whether you're eating, using implements, whether you're whatever you're using, your hands are so important because they are the holders and they are the controllers. And your arms are the support system for your hands. Your arms are the swingers of the golf club because of the length that they have from your fingers, hands, and wrists to your shoulders. Your shoulders are only complementary to the turning of the force of the golf club. They only turn 90 degrees. Your hands turn 160 degrees on your backswing. The further they travel and the faster they travel, the more you better understand the feel and the control of what's happening with the golf club. And feel is very difficult to teach to the degree of success and control. So that's why golf is so difficult to play. You have a descending blow with the irons, and then you have an ascending blow with the wood club. So you have it's a game of feel. And I might add this, I have looked at golf swings, and Hagen didn't swing like Sarrazin. Sarrazin didn't swing like Nelson. Nelson didn't swing like Hogan. Hogan didn't swing like Nicklaus. Nicklaus didn't swing like Tiger Woods. All their swings were slightly different because their minds and their feel were different, but they were consistent. And therein lies the ability to play golf consistently from tee to green. But the hardest thing I learned as a teacher was teaching poor players. Then I really had to think of how I would have them have the proper grip on the club and how I would start to sensitize their hands and the swinging of their arms and the turning of their body while they were trying to swing and accelerate the club.
With the great Bob Toski, we'll be back to wrap up the show. And we are back for our final segment of the show. It's been a pleasure to spend time with an all-around great guy. Just a special friend, really a family guy, and a guy who is a legend, just a living legend. You don't run into those that many that lived this long, 98 years young, when Bob Toski. And Bob, regular contributor to this show, so we always appreciate his time. He loves coming on. We keep tricking him, so apparently he loves coming on. But Bob, that was a great last segment. And you were talking about feel. Can one actually teach feel to a player?
Certainly, by talking about the amount of pressure you hold the golf club when you swing it.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
Keith.
Yes, sir.
I hope that someday they are able to apply the grip pressure of the hands in the golf swing, starting before even the waggle and then the starting action of the swing and the full swing, to understand and scientifically see how much grip pressure there is changing in the golf swing because of centripetal and centrifugal force. And therein lies what I think is the importance of how to teach feel. But they haven't arrived at that yet because they're talking about the human body and the big muscles, and the big muscles can't control the golf swing because they're not touching the golf club. The little muscles are your speed muscles. The big muscles are a support system for your hands and your feet. Take your hands off the club and your feet off the ground, and you might as well be on the moon. Because you have no control.
So says the great Botoski. I told you, he's just great. I mean, the things that come out of your mouth, Bob. It's true, though. But so why can't and why hasn't it gotten to the teaching of feel as a standard thing?
It's one of the hardest things to teach in golf. And until they find a way to take from technology to be able to sensitize the feeling of the golf club and the pressure of the hands in the golf swing, then they will make great strides, because then the player will realize what is happening when they do swing the golf club. All right, I'll give you a case in point.
Okay.
Who was the greatest home run hitter in baseball?
Home run number by numbers, Hank Aaron, Henry Aaron.
Okay, what was his batting average?
Don't recall? That's an easy look up if I have to.
Ted Williams' batting average was 300 and what?
300 and what, you said?
Over 300, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
One of the best ever.
How many home runs did he hit as a player?
We have to go to the stat board again for that.
All right, but here's my answer to what I'm trying to explain. The home run hitters had a poor batting average.
Yes.
The guys that hit singles and doubles and sometimes triples and never had a home run had a great batting average. That's because they control the bat to find the ball with a sense of speed, which was not moving at a rate of speed that they couldn't control. So therein lies the sensitivity of the hands and the feet as they stride into the ball to strike it. They weren't thinking of home runs. They were thinking of just hitting the baseball where someone couldn't catch it or find it on the ground. So if you think of how much speed the home run hitter tried to find the ball and then struck out more times than the guy that didn't try to swing the bat at a rate of speed to hit the ball over the fence. So
Aaron had 755. Ted Williams finished his career with 521. We're finishing up the show with the great Bob Toski. We're just out of time. Get out there and practice your game. Practice. Take it to the next level. And we will talk to you next week. Take care.